You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello and welcome. Noise Direction is back. Season 2, baby. Here we go.
Episode 20, season 2, baby. We're here. We're back.
Yeah, we've got sick ideas. We've got a bunch of cool concepts. We're going to do this entire episode we wrote as like a rap epic that we're going to do with Scotty providing beats, obviously. And
I didn't get enough feedback on my whistling to start beatboxing for our fans, but anyone can I do free cameos, just requests. So
anyway, do you remember the night with Municipal Waste? We figured out about the cameo union with Old Thrash Guys.
Yeah. Well, we played this game on tour. That's a really fun way to waste some time is you guess, like somebody has their phone and is going through Cameo and you say the name of a person on Cameo and then everyone has to guess how much it costs. But I think we were also doing it Price is Right style where you couldn't go over. So you had that cheat move where you could say like $41. But yeah.
Yeah.
Best birthday gift I ever got was my wife got me a cameo from Ice-T. It was fucking dope. It's the best. It was the coolest thing.
That's actually sick.
It was so cool. And like Ice-T's some cameos are better than worse, right? You don't know. I guess you can do a little research, but like Ice-T, as far as I can tell, just sets up in a room in his house and busts out all of them at one time, but he's set up nice in front of his camera and he's comfortable. And he definitely read the email from my wife that said that I was, he was Ice-T. I like to think that Ice-T still knows and thinks about tent crimes and stuff like that, which obviously he doesn't, but it was really cool when he was yeah, good luck with tank crimes. And
why would Ice-T know tank crimes?
Because my wife put it in an email that she attached $350 to get him to send me a 60-second fucking thing.
No, but I thought...
may know about tank crimes. Carlos from No Echo, who sang for Tank Crimes band Deny the Cross, made a body count video off the last album. Mike Gitter is fucking body counts A&R man at fucking Century Media, who's just been a hardcore guy and friend of the label for the whole time and stuff. There's a couple reasons why you could. Dan Rosenblum, who's Municipal Waste and Ghoul's booker, is also body counts booker. There's a lot of close affiliations. We're gonna bring it home one day.
We're gonna do a body count spaz dystopia split,
dude. I was trying to make up this dream tour because Dirk, the drummer from Megadeth, always hangs out in LA.
Yeah.
And then we had on the Napalm Death tour, we had my buddy Oscar, who is the guitar tech or the full band tech roadie for Body Count 2. And I was like, dude, and we all know Mustaine and Ice-T are homies and shit. And I was like, dude, Megadeth, Body Count, Municipal Waste. Let me go on a stadium tour before I die, a legit stadium tour. Let's do it. So who knows? I fed it. I put it in the channel. Anyways, should we podcast today? Are we rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling.
We're rolling. What's up, Ice-T? Happy 30th anniversary to... it must be longer than... He just said... I think Rhyme Pays just had an anniversary. But as I say 30... Shit, I was 13 30 years ago. That was not right. It must be 35-year anniversary of Rhyme Pays. Anyways, thanks for listening, Ice-T. We appreciate you tuning in to our podcast. Would you like to talk about tape labels with us? Call in. So today's topic, I wanted to talk about something I've been thinking about a lot lately. We did a show not too long ago that I got a lot of feedback from some label people on. And honestly, you guys, if we're really speaking the truth, Maddie does this podcast for you musicians, but I really do it for you label owners, aspiring label owners, self-releasers. My message is shotgun towards you much more. So me and Maddie play off that. But today I'm taking the lead, and this is really for the labels, you know. How do you get distribution? The thing is that I realized I gave that whole podcast about, like, that's what you should be aspiring for, to level up. But honestly, like, there's so few and far between distributors now. When I got hit up directly, I didn't really have, like, the best advice for somebody who maybe's got, you know, less than 10 tapes out, or, you know, hasn't done a vinyl or CD or something yet, you know. And so I was spending a lot of time thinking about, like, what is really, like, a specific advice for somebody who has, like, I mean, fuck it, less than 10. I mean, even less than 5 releases out, you know. I mean,
yeah,
what do you
it's
do?
Hard
if,
to...
It's hard to keep attention if you've got 5 releases and now you've got another one coming in, like, 4 months or something, you know. Like, how do you keep that heat? How do you keep it going on? You know, I mean, the music scene moves really fucking fast, you know. It just does. I mean, bands, even if you have one of the biggest records of the year, shit, then the next year comes, dude, and people move, you know. Like, it doesn't mean you lose their fandom. It means you lose some of their attention, because, you know, that's what we're all fighting for out here.
Yeah.
And so something that I came up with, I think there's been, you know, I love seeing all the new labels pop up. And, you know, if we know anything about history, you know, for every 10 labels that pop up, maybe
half of one will turn into something.
Yeah. Like one is going to be that guy. Maybe 2 stay in the game, you know, which is fine too, because, you know, punk is fleeting, music is fleeting, you know. Maybe you can jump on some of the great labels, came in and really documented a scene really fast and burned hot and sweet and gone. And now they're there for the archives, you know? So, I was thinking about some of the tactics I used, coming up with Tank Crimes before I really had access to not even just a distributor. Because here's the thing, when you start getting a distribution, some of the lower level distributions, they just make your shit available, right? But then a higher level distribution actually has, like, there's, like, salespeople out, like, pushing your record for you, which is ultimately what you think everyone would do, but it's just not the case. So what do we do when we can't find someone to do it for us, Maddie?
We do it ourselves.
We do it our fucking selves, baby. That's right. That powerful energy from Maddie. We do it ourselves. So now, how the fuck am I going to start a record distribution? Well, it's not as hard as you think. You know who your peers are, right? Like, if you're in a band, you know who your peers are. You know who your influences are, and you know where you aspire to be. One way you can keep some heat on your label, this even works for a band that's self-releasing too, right? Like, you don't just have to sell your own record. You're a record label, even if it's just your own record label, you know? Give people reason to come back. So we used to do this through trading when I started. So that's when the biggest way I had distribution when I started was trading. That seems really good, and it worked really well for me because I was the guy who was loading crates of 7-inches up to shows every weekend, right? But then what I realized was, not only are some records just simply stinkers and cannot be sold, a lot of times a band needs to actually come and physically play in your town for you to be able to move their stuff, you know? But even now, maybe you're just selling online anyways. Let's see. But the other problem that I had with trading was, sometimes you're trading your gold for someone else's stinkers. But also, I know this as fact now, because I unfortunately have got a slew of releases from my first couple of years that are absolutely stuck in the digital dollar bin right now. And if you want to own any of my early catalog, you can probably find it on Discogs for just a few dollars. And one of the reasons why that happened to us was, some of the people that I was trading with early on were not putting any energy into selling those records. They simply wanted their records in my distro, right? They're thinking, I'm moving the record sold. there's a lot of that feeling early on where just selling out the record is the ultimate success. And you start getting ahead of yourself of if these records are actually in people's record collections, or if they're just going out into the, or they're just leaving your bedroom, right?
Yeah.
And so one place I really got burned was 10 years later when everyone had to like move out of their punk house or whatever apartment they were in and they're going through their shit. Well, guess what? There's fucking a bunch of records that I thought were sold out still have fucking 6 to 10 copies sitting in someone's fucking closet, right? That now just either get dumped off at the local record store or go to Discogs or whatever. So anyways, go buy these from me. If I could combine shipping, I would just buy all the dollar bin Tank Crimes records off fucking Discogs at once and just to get them to move. So that's why trading can be sketchy.
Yeah, now, and that's part of the game, right? Is it's like...
Well, so I used to think trading was like, well, I already spent the money on the record, right? So yeah. Trading it, I'm really getting a better wholesale cost because I'm not even actually wholesaling it off this person. I'm really trading at the cost of my record, even below wholesale. Yeah. So like I'm really pinching pennies and I'm thinking it. But I want to make the case now for moving past trading as a form of distribution into simply paying up front for other people's records and you selling them, right? There's a couple reasons why this is good. One, I know one of Maddie's concerns when I proposed this topic was that, Maddie.
Well, it's a couple things, right? One, I think that, you know, it's like you're saying where you're getting stinkers when you're giving away gold, right? It's like, and people aren't really working to sell your shit. Like people are not... This isn't because they're shitty necessarily. It's just because they don't think about it, right?
Yeah, they don't have the same energy you do. I mean, you're going to find these people in all walks of life in any business. You're going to find the
and
people
you can't,
with
you
less
can't
enthusiasm.
Expect them, yeah, you can't expect them to have that enthusiasm. You know, you just got to be like, oh, okay, fine. You know, and so that's like the one problem. The other big problem with buying wholesale, and this is sort of the initial... So basically, just for those who don't understand... Most labels, you know, you can buy records from them wholesale if you're going to be the distributor. You contact their business-to-business department, you hit them up, and you're like, hey, you know, Prophecy Productions, can I please buy 100 Alcest records from you wholesale to put in my distro? And then, you know, my friend Marco replies to your email and is like, oh, hey, yes, totally, dude. Give me your details.
Okay, but what was the problem with that request?
But here's the problem.
Yeah.
Is you don't, records don't sell as much as you think they do. And I've seen a lot of people buy, you know, 100 Alcest records that they're going to try to sell out of their punk house or sell going to shows or whatever. And Alcest being a known quantity. You know, and they can't sell them. They sell like 5. Cause I think a lot of people get so caught up in the scene. They don't realize how small the scene really is. And also like how few people actually buy records and how few people are actually like down to buy records at a given time. You know what I mean? And I think like, you know, how, like when you look at, I don't know. Yeah. Just like, I think it's easy to get caught up in it and like have all your friends, you know, I see a lot of people who will like post the Instagram story and be like, hey, if I started a distro, would you buy from me? And like, they have the vote.
Everyone
thing.
Says yes. Everyone says yes.
Exactly. But then, you know, the time comes and guess what? Did anyone buy from them? No. And that's not because their friends are shitty. It's not because their friends are bad people. It's just because that's how the world fucking works.
So this warning from Maddie really lends itself to me pushing this because just don't have big eyes. Because the great thing about wholesaling is you don't have to buy 100. You don't even have to buy 10. You can get a few and start. And like your money's going to be more well spread across a few copies of several different titles than like letting your nuts hang out into 100 of one band's title, you know?
Yeah, you know, but it's
so
just
you don't
like,
have to get overloaded. The same way, the same thing happens when you're starting to look at numbers, right? Like, be like, oh shit, like 250 tapes or 7 inches cost this much, but man, they're like half the price if we make 1,000. It's the same mentality there. You're thinking, oh shit, you can never, even with distro items, the same as a record you put out, you can't look at it as money made when it's in stock.
Yeah.
You still have to sell it. But then here's why this is going to put you at an advantage to sell your own stuff. Because if you can bring people over to your world by showing them a couple records they already know about, it's kind of a version of like getting a good show. You're a smaller band and you get a good show with a bigger touring package, right? Now you've at least been on the same fucking handbill as some bigger acts, right? Wouldn't it be nice if your label had your fucking release next to some of those bigger acts? See where I'm going with this? It like builds credibility.
But also I think it's like one of those things too, where like, if you can find a reasonable niche for you for that, then that gets people going to your store. Right. I look at like my friends at Gatekeeper Productions who have a distro whose name I have forgotten, and I will pull it up while we talk. But like her niche was like, look, like there's not really anyone else selling like cool German black metal here in, you know, in Canada, where you don't have to pay shipping. Most of these distros are based in America, right? Or you know, in the USA, and that's not really helpful for them. Charon's Bell Curations is their shop, but like that's the thing, right? Is they're like, oh, okay, we have this niche, and like you can figure out what your niche is going to be, right? Like you can sit there and be like,
well, hopefully you already have an idea of it is if you're already releasing stuff, you know, based hopefully around, you
figured
that
around
out.
Your label. Yeah. Cause it's like, oh, hey, if someone is, you know, if someone is, you know, on the Dystopia is on the Tank Crime store to buy Dystopia, then they'd
that's
probably
why I
be...
stock Grief records and Newthrush records, because I get the bands that complement that. I want to have something that someone can put in their cart when they're buying a Dystopia record, you know? So I'm like, oh, cool. These are the bands that toured with them or members went on to be in, you know? So here's where the second part of my thing, because I think the first part I've talked about, like kind of bringing some bigger bands into the fold to kind of give you some credibility, some bigger releases. Here's where the other shoe drops that I think is equally, if not more important, especially if you want to level up. And this is when you have that niche store, this is where you're doing it for your community, not just your own record sales. Because one of the ways I started my distro, same as I did my label, was like, oh shit, I need all the Bay Area bands shit in my distro, right? So if let's take that just to a more general audience, whatever my specific form of metal is, or let's just even stick with this Dystopia example. I've got these like crust punk sludge records to sell. Who else is in that wheelhouse? Who else is at my same level doing this? This is where the community starts. Because it can work for a label in a similar way that for bands, I always say hosting shows in your hometown can help you. As a newer label, helping other labels have distribution, promoting their releases alongside yours, that's the community I'm talking about. The people that understand that are the ones that stick around. And I say stick around because you will build relationships with other labels that will fall by the wayside and they will become part of our music, extreme music history. And I've seen so many labels and bands come and go, right? But part of what's only not only kept me relevant, but also me excited and interested in what I'm doing is finding out who's new, who needs help, who I want to partner up with, who's doing this. And so that's my full pitch. That's my full pitch on starting a distro. Complimentary bands to bring new people, help out your friends and peers, other associates, make friends with other like-minded label people. And then if you're in, if you really have the time and can expand and you think this is going good, that's when you can start making the cold calls to some stores or just stopping in your local store and being like, hey, look, I know I came in here 2 months ago and I just had one cassette for sale and you can sign two of them. But now check it out. I have a catalog. I can offer you all 20 of these releases at wholesale prices and I can keep you restocked when you sell. And it just kind of moves from there. And now, you know, I mean, I think right now with like the current like tape label boom, if there was somebody who stood out and really like spearheaded this and actually made the effort to try to get stores to buy tapes. Now, you know, like distros like Ebullition are doing really well with tapes, but a lot of bigger distros don't even fuck with them. I mean, that's one reason to maybe try getting into CDs if you're doing just tapes, but stores still sell them and buy them. They just don't know where to get them in like bulk, you know, like where do I get all this stuff? How do I stock up this whole genre's worth of cassettes, you know, whether this be garage rock power pop or fucking death metal, you know? I mean, speaking of garage rock power pop, there's a massive void in that whole scene since Burger Records imploded. I mean, they were running that tape game. They were the guys who even made freaking Tape Store Day or whatever, the thing that doesn't exist. But my point is you can really push that and you can really grow and you could do a lot for your scene because, oh, I know what my point was. If there was somebody that was really had like a dozen or more store accounts for cassettes, I'm talking about lifting up your whole scene to where everybody actually needs to start pressing more cassettes to fulfill the orders for the distributors, right? Like if we had somebody doing this and then, you know, I mean, this is happening. This isn't something that's not happening and I'm coming up with. I'm just putting it out there to our listeners.
I would counter. I like the idea. I would counter. I think the market is a little bit small, but yes, the concept is important.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, ultimately what I want to say, but I mean, we're still not out of the pandemic yet, is ultimately what I want to say is then you start taking your fucking boxes to shows. And that's, you know, I just want to, sometimes when I'm given advice, want to steer away from just being like, well, I did this and I did that, because I also fucked up a lot too, you know? And if I keep giving this advice about shows and we don't even know if this shit's going to work this year, right? Like we're still in experimental show mode, right? So yeah, Maddie, how many shows did you go to in London this month?
Shut up, Scotty.
It's the middle of the fucking summer, bro. It's not really happening yet. You know, we're all announcing dates, but I don't know. I don't have tour until October. So we'll see. Still, what, tomorrow? When is it? Is today? So this episode goes up on August 2nd, right? Would be Monday.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm still 2 months from my first show that I'm supposed to be working on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's at like the fucking Hollywood Palladium, by the way. My first show back is with Volbeat. So like,
yeah, I noticed that. That made me laugh. I was like, that's good.
Haven't worked in 2 years. Our last show was in Berlin in December 2019. And hopefully I remember how to plug people's guitars in because we're going to be at the goddamn Palladium with Volbeat. And then the next day we play Alex's Bar in Long Beach, which is like a party show, you know, that's like a 300 cap.
Yeah. That's good. That'll be fun.
So wrap it up. I don't know. I kind of maybe rambled a lot. I was maybe more, I'm passionate about this. I hope I conveyed that. I'm always open to answer questions. I've actually privately floated this idea to a couple friends that I really think should pursue this. And I kind of wanted to get some of this down on tape if I could think of new ideas. I want everyone to do good, because I see you guys out there working hard. I see you guys out there loving your music and loving the stuff you do, and wanting to push, you know, for labels, wanting to push your friends' bands or the friends you're making or the friends you're about to make, you know, and just make it work for everybody. And Maddie wants the same.
Yeah.
Maddie wants the same, but also you can DM him for a personal private conversation as well.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you how he really thinks about my ideas.
I mean, like, look, I just think as we wrap up, I just think, like, look, at the end of the day, this stuff is cool. I just want to, like, I'm, you know, very conservative in terms of how I approach business, right?
Yeah, but keep in mind, like we said at the beginning, you're often speaking directly to musicians, and I'm more speaking to
but even the
business.
Even talking to the business, I think a lot of people, one of the things that's made me really successful has been that I'm very conservative, and I keep a lot of my, I cover my ass at every turn, right? Like, even the way I pay my employees is like based on a per project basis, not a salary. So I like, they know roughly what they're going to get in a month, but I'm never like on the hook for money that I don't have.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and they all have like protection, but whatever. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is cover your ass. This, like, and I feel weird saying this because, like, I'm the kid who fucking dropped out of school for death metal. You know what I mean?
Leave your options open. Drop out of college for death metal. That's a wide window of leaving your options open.
Yeah, I'm not a good example. But what I'm saying is, like, don't risk a bunch of money on this. Start by risking, like, $300 and being
start slow. Part of my message was that, and I was trying to make that very clear.
No, but I just want to really emphasize wholesale that. Like,
stores wholesale records one at a time, right?
Yeah.
Like, they might get 10 things one. If you're going online, you might want more than that, but this is like, yeah, take the steps. Talk to one other label, talk to one friend's label, and maybe try to order some records off of a larger label. Or
you know, it goes back to that crucial thing that Scotty always talks about when you want to press a record. Take $3,000 out of your bank account. Hold it in your hand and ask yourself, would I rather have this?
Am I okay if I never get this back? Would I throw this out the window for a record? Then you're ready. So,
yeah.
So if
and
you
it's the same thing with
this
Discro.
I think you're right, Maddie. You put aside $300 and ask
yourself. Whatever.
$300
would get you like what? You could probably get like
25 LPs or
probably more than that.
60 tapes.
You could get more than 25
LPs. I don't know, man.
LPs.
I mean, LPs wholesale for like 10 to 14.
Yes, yeah, so you can
now,
get like 30.
I still have LPs that I wholesale for $650. But I mean, the fucking needle's moving, right?
Yeah. The point I'm trying to make is, start with $300. Don't think this is like, you know, like, again, don't look at it and be like, wow, Season of Mist will fucking sell me Morbid Angel records at $10 a pop, suckers. Like, that's not what's happening here. You know what I mean? Like, that's not.
It also gives you something. Let me try to hype it to Matt another way too, that might get him a little more on board. You know,
but again, I'm not against
to talk
it.
About.
I want
to push it into your world. Things to talk about that you're doing.
Yeah,
A lot of people are caught up on. You know, Maddie preaches make content, push yourself out there, get out there, get in everyone's face. And a lot of times people go, but Matt, I don't know what to talk about. And this is a lot of why you should tune into Maddie's stuff, because he'll tell you. But Maddie, this is a great one. Hey, I have Morbid Angel records in the distro. Boom. That's like a whole day of talking about myself. I get to move on, sell a couple records.
Yeah, you know, and that's why like, these are the things. Like, I do a lot of free shit for like Arthur Brown and shit because like I get to work with Arthur Brown. He's fucking the god of hellfire. That's a good look for me, and I'm able to help him with some things because he's my friend. Arthur Brown, my friend. Me and Arthur
Your Brown. Friend, Arthur Brown, who you go pipe you know, shopping with.
One of our, what his, so he's my mutual with Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix and I have mutuals.
Okay. Does that make does that make you my mutual with Jimi Hendrix?
No, we're,
no. You're my second degree of Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, I'm your second degree of Jimi Hendrix, yeah. actually, I'm pretty sure Jinx knew Jimi Hendrix, and I think the Magma guys knew him. So I have like multiple mutuals with Jimi Hendrix. That's all I'm trying to say. Anyway, I think I'm cool. This has been a very good beginning of season two of Noise Direction. Thank you for listening. We hope you got something out of this. I know that a lot of this was like pretty high level stuff, but I think Scotty's right. It's important that we help the next generation of labels as we embrace our role as sort of scene elders.
Bro, I'm still trying to level up. If anyone's got any advice for me too, fucking tell me.
You know,
me,
I fucking try to tell you. You never fucking listen.
Tell me how to level up, dude.
I'm fucking tell you how to level up, Scotty. Anyway, thank you for listening. We'll be back next Monday. Party on. Stay safe. Get fucking vaccinated, please. For the love of God.
Please.
I don't want to have to deal with Scotty being sad when they cancel Municipal Waste Tour.
Come on. I've been vaccinated for like 3 months, bro. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's go. Let's fucking get Municipal Waste. Let's fucking crowd kill. Let's fucking crush some 16-year-olds face in. It's going to be fun, but we have to get vaccinated if we want to punch 16-year-olds.
Yeah, I want to do an episode this year where I talk about show etiquette.
Yes.
Stage diving potato etiquette. Let's do
it.
Oh,
my God. Yes. Oh, my God. Wow, it's going to be good. Thank you for listening. Next episode, stage etiquette. Party.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.